Hi, it's Diane, and it is Tuesday at noon on November 18th. I'm here with Krista and Ellen. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Why don't we start with a quick check-in? Last time we talked about shifting expectations, and I'm curious how things went for both of you in terms of that tool.
I'll go first, if you don't mind, Ellen.
Sure.
We had a rough week because Miles has some side effects from his meds, and so we took him off meds for 2 weeks to kind of clear out his system. And so I was trying to shift my expectations back down, and it was a struggle, to say the least. But what I could say is that I do believe that Maz and I could both sort of talk about the struggle. Like, we both were like, this is hard, you know, like, and somewhat laugh about it, for the most part, but we did have some rough moments where it just, I forget how much the meds support him in being able to kind of just follow through. And what's a little frightening for me is I had a conversation with Miles about trying to put the meds into perspective. Like, the meds don't make you smart. The meds don't make you kind. The meds don't make you marvelous. The meds aren't what's great about you, you know? The meds help you be all those things, because he just kept wanting, sliding into this place where he just wanted to say, well, I can't do anything because I don't have my meds. And that was the scary sort of thought for me.
So what do you think was this, if you got curious about the situation, what do you think was kind of going through his head as he watched himself perform with that medication?
You know, I was wondering if I'm sending that message, you know, you know, when sometimes when he doesn't want to take the meds, I try to encourage him, and I'm wondering if I had sort of inadvertently kind of send that message, like, it helps you, you know. So I was worried about that. I think also I alerted his teacher and the special ed teacher and let them know, and maybe we're just all putting the wrong message there. But, you know, we tried to sort of work back from that. Like, he had a test, and he did well on the test. Took him twice as long, but he did well on the test. And, you know, I was like, see, that proves that has nothing to do with meds. It has to do with your brain, and your brain is just fine.
Yeah, so it's like if you were going to go back in retrospect, you know, kind of once he's back on, what is it that you most want him to notice and learn from the experience of being off?
I guess I want him to feel confident that he is a capable person, and that the meds help him be his best self, but they do not make him his best self. I don't know if that's very clear.
Yeah, it is. And I guess the question is it, you know, it would be interesting to see kind of how he hears that and gets that. I'm gonna stay with this topic for a second, because it came up at our house too, since there's only two of you. I'll coach myself here for a minute. But we got home from a trip on Sunday, and I knew that my son had, like, slept till noon, and that typically means that he doesn't medicate, because it's a school night and he doesn't want to be up till midnight. And so he was having a difficulty, you know, almost right away as we tried to engage and try to communicate about what was going on for the week. I was like, oh, you didn't medicate. You know, it was just like I was aware of myself having this mindset, like, okay, he hasn't medicated. What? you know, what can I reasonably do? And I kind of, I was almost getting almost like defeatist about it. And so it's really easy to kind of get into this idea of, you know, them being there, you know, what is capable versus what is not capable without some medication. And so it's really, I can see that the language that we use with our kids is really, really important.
Yeah.
So, helping him be his best self. I mean, I think that what I would suggest is that it's more that the meds are enabling him, his brain to work more efficiently.
Okay.
His brain is able to work more effectively, which means that the things that are hard for him, like managing his emotions, like getting started and following through, like sitting still, whatever those, you know, pick three or four things that you know are really pretty hard for him, and say that the meds don't fix that for him, but the meds make it easier for his brain to focus, which makes it easier for him to do those things than it is when he's not on the meds. Does that resonate differently?
Yeah.
So, Ellen, any thoughts to add to this conversation about talking to our kids about their meds? I don't know if your child is medicated
or
not.
Yeah, I mean, I find it very fascinating because I've had my son was on medication from second grade through eighth grade. For the middle school years, struggled finding the right meds, so he got to a point where he didn't feel like meds helped him. So I had a long period of time with no medication. About four or five months, and he was just so resilient to taking anything. I didn't, you know, I didn't push it, and finally we switched him to another school, and he said, you know, maybe I'll try again something different. So he's actually gone, finally gone back on it, but he's still resilient to taking it on weekends. And I think partially the message we sent for years and years, I was resilient for him taking it on weekends because I felt like he needed that break. And so now where he's having more homework, and even socially, I will say, he said he was going to try it, but we got him enough for weekends, and he's not once since he said he wanted to try it, he's now done it a weekend. So I'm very conscious of the message I'm trying to say to him. Again, I don't want to say to him, well, you're much better socially when you're on your medication.
Yeah.
You know, because he is, and he gets along better with people, and he's easier to be around. But I don't want him to feel like if he's not, he's a bad person. You know, he's somebody people don't want to be with. So I struggle weekly with that, and I still haven't, he's 16, so he's not young anymore, and he knows, he feels a difference. I do like it for school, but I'm not sure he quite sees the social impact difference yet, or if he does, he's such an independent person. He's like, I want people to like me how I am, you know, with or without meds. So, I think it's a continual conversation, and, you know, and especially as they're starting to become more independent and more adults, they're making those decisions themselves, and it's not always easy to try to figure out how to support that decision when you see that maybe taking the meds is a better decision for them.
Right.
Yeah. It's interesting, and I'm going to point you to, and anybody listening, there's a blog I wrote, and it's been a while. I wrote it in 2012, and it says why I choose to medicate my ADHD child. And, you know, and it's very clear that sometimes I medicate, the choice is because of him and how it will help him. Sometimes it's about how it will help me to parent, because I can interact with him in a different level and in a different way, just because of what he is and isn't able to focus in on. And sometimes it's for everybody else, and it's, you know, to help him to fit in, you know, and that sort of thing. And so it's just an interesting conversation. So the punchline, so here's the close of it. So last night, we were working on homework, and my son always has the choice of whether or not I usually encourage him to take an extra homework pill, because a lot of times he has late homework and it's hard for him. And I didn't say anything to him last night, and all of a sudden he gets up from the table and he goes over and he grabs the pill bottle, and he's like, I need another one. I need a booster. And, you know, nine days out of 10, he doesn't. And so it's the fact that he he was like, I really need this. It was a great aha for me that he understands, you know, the role it plays in his life and how it helps him. And so that's, I think that that's kind of a goal that, you know, I hope for all of us when your kids get mature enough. And mine's, you know, 15 and a half, so it does take time. Okay, so Ellen, what's going on with you? That was a really long check-in.
Sorry.
No, it's no worries. There's only two of you. It works fine. Ellen, what's going on at your place?
So I feel like we're kind of at a plateau. I'm not sure I've made a lot of headway with the my AIM issue, which is to try to work with him on not getting so many homework reports, and he had four last week, which is probably the most he's had. And we had a conversation about it again, and you know, he kind of just got defensive about it, because I don't get angry, and I just say, you know, what's going on? Why do you think you're getting these? And is there something I can do to support you? It would, you know. And, you know, he was like, go ahead, just check my Moodle, which is how they, you know, every night. And I said, it's not about me checking it. It's about us working together to try to improve the situation. I say one of the things, he's in a school that they're really understanding about it, you know, but he still gets a zero. And, you know, part that I like is understanding he doesn't feel bad that he doesn't get the zero about himself. But at the same time, I think he's building this thing about, well, we all make mistakes. And I finally said to him, yes, we all make mistakes, but one of the keys in life is trying to learn from those mistakes and see what we can do to make it different. And I don't think I think the school is kind of sending a message, it's okay to make mistakes. And I'm trying to say, yes, it is, but if you do this every week and it's some time, then something needs to change. And yeah, I'm not sure I'm connecting with him. And he's fiercely independent, always has been. And, you know, and I even said, you know, we can check the Moodle. I want, if we're going to do this, that we check it together, because it's not about me checking over to make sure you've done it. It's about helping you to figure out how you're doing it so it works for you.
Right. So the thing I love about the way you're approaching it is that you're making it his problem instead of yours, and you're trying to find ways to hold him accountable, and you're offering support. And it sounds like you're on the edge of, you know, of this, and part of it is getting him to a place of buy-in.
Yeah.
So when you get curious, what would it take to get him bought into some process? Let's just pretend we don't know what the process is, but what would it take to get him more bought in?
I think caring more about his grades. Because if you don't really care about the grades, you don't care that you get the zero for the homework report.
So I guess so that makes perfect sense. And so what I thought, and actually I had this conversation with Jacob last night, is that kids go, you know, you can have a clear line motivation. It's like, if I get good grades, then I can go to the college that I want to, and I can, you know, whatever the clear path is from a logical left brain perspective from cause and effect. For our kids, a lot of times that breaks down because the normal cause and effect doesn't work for a couple reasons, partly because it's so far away, right? And then the other is what happens is that our kids, from a self-esteem perspective, a lot of times when they get a bunch of zeros and they have a lot of failures, part of their brain that thinks that they can do it kind of shuts down, and they get hyper-focused on the failure. And so then they get kind of defeatist, and it's hard to get buy-in and motivate when, you know, they kind of get to this place where it's like, why should I bother? I'm not gonna remember anyway, Mom. You know? And they would never actually say that out loud, but that's kind of what goes on in their heads. So you're trying to create some motivation for him, and so I guess the question is, if he's not motivated by the normal cause and effect, how could you create some motivation for him that might inspire him to get more bought in?
I've been trying to figure that out for years.
I guess the question is there some kind of, you know, so is there some kind of interim goal? Is there some kind of something, you know, so I don't know whether it's the next progress report or if it's the, you know, or if it's, you know, each week that you get, you know, clear the zeros within a certain number of days, you know, is it about you know, I think that there's several pieces of this, Ellen. Part of it is kind of figuring out where is it that the process is breaking down? Remind me, because I think you've talked about this before.
Yeah, well, he has two, I'd say there's two reasons. One is he'll look, it's all on the internet, which is a wonderful thing because it's there. But what he does is he looks at it, you know, let's say at five and there's five subjects to do. So he does three and then he kind of forgets about the other two. And unlike, you know, I guess somebody who doesn't have the ADHD who are like, I'm crazy and I check it out three times. Like, that's me. He'll do it the one time and be like, I looked at it. And then so when he gets a report, he'll say, you know, I did the first three subjects and I kind of forgot about the English. Or sometimes he'll be really honest and say, you know what, I was just in a depressed mood and I didn't feel like doing anymore. That's the harder one for me to deal with because he acknowledges that he didn't do it and didn't care about doing it.
Okay, so there's two pieces of this. One is the breakdown of the process is one, capturing the assignments, and then the second place that it breaks down is following through and finishing them when motivation is low, right?
Correct.
Okay. So I think it's important to know that those are two different things, and when we take aim, we want to get really specific on what we're doing to take aim to... You know, is it about, you know, you can capture it globally. I want to try to help my child to, you know, have fewer zeros or resolve the zeros sooner. When he looks on the system, is he looking for zeros or is he looking for assignments before they turn into zeros?
I'm encouraging him to look for the assignments.
Okay. But he does have the possibility, if he misses the assignment, there's another step, which would be to go back and look and find the zeros and then make up the zeros. So it's that same sort of back-end loop.
He can't
right?
make them up.
He can or
he can't. If he gets a zero, it's done.
Okay. All right. So there's not an opportunity. Okay. Okay. So when you look at this, and so how do you feel about taking aim on this one? That feel like the right thing to focus in on today?
It is.
Okay. So is it more about capturing the assignments or more about following through on the assignments when motivation is low?
I guess I'd like to concentrate on the second one because I feel like the first one, if he lets me in, I can help him with. I can help him capture it. I'm not sure how I help him with the motivation as much. So I would like more to take aim on that because I think that's a bigger issue in life than just not,
yeah.
than by mistake not doing it because not remembering it. I don't know.
Well, and the reality is that sometimes with motivation, it's about finding motivation, and we'll talk about this in a minute, and sometimes with motivation, it's about putting a system and structure in place so that we can manage through a situation where we're not entirely motivated. Does that make sense?
Okay.
So I think it's a good one. I think, you know, just kind of pay attention kind of in both spaces. There may be something to learn in both areas. Krista, where do you want to take aim?
Where do I want to take aim? I think scaffolding. I tend to struggle with scaffolding correctly. I put too much up or too little up, you know. And this morning
I lost my temper
because he can't put his shoes on. And I'm like, you're 11 years old. You can put your shoes on, you know. But in an effort to get him to school on time, I sometimes am like doing everything just to get him, you know, because I've decided that getting him to school on time and trying to show him but that's more important than, you know, not.
So I think we need to drill in a little bit on this one. So I hear you say that the amount of support that you're giving him and how to know what support and when to support, is that generally the challenge that you're identifying?
Yeah. I seem to have only two modes, too much or too little. It feels that way. It feels very hit or miss.
Okay. So knowing that, is there a particular particular area of the day or area where you tend to scaffold, you can see yourself flip-flop more than others so that we can kind of use a specific example as we talk through this?
The morning. I tend to feel like I'm over-scaffolding in the morning and then in an effort to just get him to school, and then I get angry that I'm, you know, putting his shoes on his feet, and he's 11.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I feel like I'm just moving him.
Well, and I think that that's the piece of it is that, you know, we'll talk more about this, but it's kind of like, when do you scaffold and when do you just move the situation forward and then go back and regroup?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's exactly the thing that I think this is truly my lesson and not his, because I really feel like I'm like Jekyll and Hyde, you know, I'm like full of support and then I'm like, get your damn shoes on, you know, 10 seconds later, you know, because
so,
I'm like,
so
damn it.
I hate to tell you this, Krista, but you're pretty normal.
Oh, I thought it could be fixed.
Well, but here's the thing. I mean, so what's going on is you're getting triggered, right? And so once you get triggered, you're like, you go into search and destroy mode. And when you're in search and destroy mode, you're not going to wait and you're not going to be like, okay, let me get your buy-in. Let me figure out where to support you. It's just get your blanket shoes on and let's get out the door. And so it's systems and structures to manage your own escalation of frustration.
Yeah.
So you can stay calm and not just kind of that, we talked about this last time, I don't know if it was in this group or the other group, but there's like two kinds of calm. There's really calm, and then there's the, I really want to yell at you and I'm gritting my teeth, but I want to make you think I'm calm. We're not talking about that kind of calm. We're talking about really just staying calm and about managing your own escalation in the process.
Yeah, that would be outstanding.
Okay. All right. So I hear you saying loud and clear that the challenge is more you than it is him.
Absolutely. I feel like I'm, and what's interesting is for me, I hated my mom's inconsistency, and I feel like I have mastered that inconsistency in such a masterful way. You know, where I felt like my mom just suddenly I was like, oh my God, who is she now? And I'm having that same experience where I find myself doing the exact same thing to my son.
Yeah.
Like we were just laughing a minute ago. Now she's crazy.
Not so much. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. So are you both clear on where you're taking aim?
Yes.
Okay. So today's conversation is about using systems and structures. It's the fourth critical response area. And I like that we do it fourth, because a lot of the other areas, parenting positively, activating the brain, shifting expectations, using a system or a structure can be a response in and of itself, but it can also be a way of doing one of the other two things. So you might have a system or structure that you use to activate the brain. You might have a system or structure you use to parent positively. So when we talked about like the 3-to-1 ratio and making sure that, you know, you're giving positive feedback 3 times to every 1 correction, that would be a system or a structure that you would use to remember to parent positively. So when we talk about systems and structures, it's really any methodology that you use to help you more systematically handle the challenge. So the parenting action model is actually a system and structure that we use and we have in place to help parents with whatever challenge area they're dealing with. Sometimes the systems and structures are for you, and sometimes they're for your kids. You know, this group we have, our kids are a little bit older, and so a lot of times we're helping our kids come up with systems and structures to remind them, to help them move through life. And we're doing this because of their challenges with executive function. The workbook, and we're on page 24, is talks about kind of 2 big areas of executive function where systems and structures can really help. One is, you know, activation, which is knowing what to do and when to do it. And then the other is working memory, which is being able to kind of keep things in your head for, you know, a period of time to make sure you follow through on them. And so the great example of a system and structure around working memory is I have a friend who, he's not ADD, but every day he gets to the door and he's leaving the house, he goes, I can't remember what order, keys, coat, phone, go, you know, something like that. It's just kind of this same thing. He says it every day when he gets to the house, he checks, he gets to the door, you know, key, coat, phone, go. And it's his way of making sure he's got everything on the way out of the house. Well, that's a system and a structure. And it's one that helps you with working memory because if you know that those are the three things you want to make sure you have every time you walk out the door, you can do that. You have that kind of a mnemonic, a memory, you know, a little catchphrase, or, you know, it could be a checklist. It could be a process that you use over and over again. Sometimes these things are real hard for us. I mean, as parents, I find kind of two places that things break down for us in systems and structures. One is that a lot of times we're either really overwhelmed as parents or we have ADD ourselves, and so just putting these sorts of things in place can be tough. And if we can get them put in place, a lot of times they can be difficult to stay consistent with. And so part of what I want to share is that you want these to become habits. You want to, you know, like everything else, we're going to take aim. We're going to take one at a time. You don't want to try to tackle 7 million systems at once because, you know, you'll get overwhelmed, you'll forget, and you'll have a difficult time being consistent. And in this session in the workbook, it talks about kind of four things that really make for better systems and structures. One is if you have buy-in, and particularly at the age that we're working on, you know, you're going to want to have your kid really have buy-in to the system. And the one that I remember, and in fact, I was just talking about this at the CHAD meeting with the parents this weekend, was the school planner. And, you know, I don't know about your schools, but our school is like everybody has to have a planner, everybody has to use the planner. There's almost like peer pressure at, you know, 8th grade, 5, 6, 7 to use the planner. Well, my kids have a really difficult time with a planner. And so, after many years of arguing and fighting with my kids about using the planner, I realized that I don't care whether they use the planner. What I need for them is to have a system in place for capturing assignments and getting them home. And so now it becomes, okay, what's your plan? You know, what are you going to do for each class? Are you going to take a picture of the board at school? Are you going to check the teacher's website when you get home at night, like Ellen was just describing? Are you going to carry it in your memory and then write it down so that I can be your backup and see it? You know, what is it that you're going to do to make sure that you have it? But it's really more your, since the system is for them, I don't care what your system is, but it has to work. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't work, then maybe we'll try my system. And that's usually, with older kids, that's typically how I'll handle it is, I don't want to tell you how to do this, but you need to do something. And if it's not working, then I'm going to jump in and either help you brainstorm another one, or I'm going to mandate and make a rule eventually. And that's really kind of, that's the scaffolding. You know, you let them come up with their own plan for doing it. You let them do it on their own. If it's not working, you ask them to create a plan and you let them do what they think they need to do from a planning perspective. If that's not working, you brainstorm with them for alternatives. And if that's not working, you tell them what they need to do and you hold them accountable for your rule. And so those are the stages of independence. And
can you repeat those one more time?
I don't know, Krista.
That was pretty good, though. I was like,
okay. So the first one would be, you know, okay, you're in charge. Go find out how to capture your homework. The simple answer is, honey, did you get your assignment? Yeah, I got it, right? That's the first thing I would say, I got it. So you let them have it for some period of time. If you notice that having it doesn't work, then you say, okay, look, just saying you got it's not working. So what's your process that you're going to use to make sure you capture the assignments and get them home? Okay, so do whatever you want, but you've got to have a process. You have to tell me what that process is. I don't care what it is. The next one, and if that breaks down, then you say, okay, so that didn't work. Why don't we brainstorm some other alternatives? We'll work together to try to come up with something else that might work for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so the two of you are partnering to come up with a solution. And if that doesn't work, then you mandate. And you say, look,
mandate.
This is what you need to do. We're going to put a rule in place that says you have to. You're going to put a reward in place if they do it. I mean, this is the point at which you pay them a dollar for every time they fill out their planner. I mean, there's, you know, there's different ways to handle it, but that's...
I have a quick question, because this is, that's what I'm doing with Austin, and we'll have, like, four straight days that everything's going fine, and then I get the bad, and then I get, you know, two reports in one day. So
yep.
in some way he's doing it, but then he has a breakdown.
Right.
And so,
so then
okay,
the taking aim, this, yeah, so then the aim becomes, okay, what was it that happened the day before? So, you know, Tuesday, he comes, you know, Tuesday you get home and there's two reports, and it's like, okay, so what happened Monday night? And so the,
right.
if I listen to yours about capturing, you know, it's more about the following through on the assignments, he probably needs another checkpoint. So it's not just about capturing the assignments, but there may be another system and structure he needs to be
yeah.
able to go through and see that it's done. So, for example, if your child is using a planner, one of the things I've seen students do is that they write it down, and when it's done, they check it off, and when it's
yeah,
turned in.
Suggested that because it's actually difficult dealing with kids with this issue, everything is online. So what I think he's doing, if he's reading online, he's not crossing anything off. So I had suggested he transfer it into a planner so that she has the act of writing it down so it's something to cross off.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but
and if so maybe you brainstorm with them. So let's take it back a step. So if we're trying to get buy-in, can you say, okay, you know, is there a step earlier, which is, you know, what? Let's brainstorm. You could print it off. You could write it down. You could take a picture of the screen. You could... you know, you could write it down when you finish it. You could, you know, there's lots of things that you could do that would capture it, but there's a step that's missing for you, buddy. How do we capture that step, which is the step of, yes, I finished everything that's on my plate. Does that make sense?
Right. Yes.
Okay.
So well, I don't know whether it's finished till I get the report the next day. I mean, I'll ask him, and he'll say yes. I'll say,
well, and so that goes back to shifting expectations. And so here's what I would tell you is that when a kid, even my 29-year-old kid, when he says, "Yeah, I did it," you know, sometimes I say, "So how do you know?"
Okay, that's a
you
good
know,
one.
Because
I never, I'm like, okay, depending on you. And then, like I said, 4 days out of five, it's good. And I've done the reward thing where I give him a dollar if he doesn't get any, and he owes me a dollar. And that does help. It does help, but it doesn't eliminate. And I guess maybe that's my shifting expectations, that I should not expect zero homework reports.
I think that's an interesting perspective. And I think that if you're not getting zero homework reports, then chances are you can't expect to not get zero homework reports. And, you know, here's the thing about the ADHD brain. It thinks, you know, there's a whole, I think I wrote an article or we had a webinar about why kids, quote unquote, lie. You know, a lot of times it's just that they don't literally remember. It's like they think they did everything and they remember doing
yeah.
it.
And that's what he'll say. I thought I did. Like, how could
yeah.
you know, like, if my brain doesn't work that way, I'd be texted four times that night. But he doesn't.
So this is
his,
so, right. So, but how do you know when one is the other? Like last night, Miles like said he read his thing, and I know he can't read that fast, you know. And so I'm like, I don't think that it's possible to read that fast, boo, you know. And so it was clear he was just lying that he read.
Yeah.
His homework. So I mean, short of, you know.
And that's the hard thing, because sometimes I'll say, well, you know, why do you tell me yes if you didn't? Because I knew you'd get angry if I told you I hadn't finished it.
Yeah, I mean,
so,
that
right.
whole line
so,
thing is
so,
such a trigger, too.
Yeah, no, and it is. So let's go back to the systems and structures here. So
okay.
what you can do is you put a system and structure in place that is the check. You know, so, for example, you know, did you brush your teeth? That's the classic one.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so the system and structure for did you brush your teeth is breathe on me or I go check your toothbrush and make sure it's wet, right? So that's
mm-hmm.
a system and structure that you put in place as a follow-up to make sure that it happens. Because the expectation
okay.
is that sometimes they're going to think that they brushed their teeth. They're going to even remember brushing their teeth, because every day brushing your teeth is exactly the same. And so it's hard to remember whether it was actually today that I did it or whether it was yesterday that I did it, because I do it every day. It's the same thing with feeding the dog. So you put a, you add a system and structure for checking. You know, if, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. And that's always been my, like, how do I check it? You know, how do I know?
So what about the personality where he's like, I can't believe you don't trust me?
Yeah.
That thing. That line.
Well, so here's the opportunity. So the opportunity is you want to take the opportunity to, in the moment, notice when the system breaks down. So, for example, you know, I'm going back, Krista, to your thing about, I read it. Okay, you know, the system and structure is that I reserve the right to give you a quiz on anything that you said that you read periodically. I'm going to do it every time. I'm going to do it periodically.
Sure.
But so it's like, okay, I'm going to give you a quiz on it. Dude, it doesn't seem like you really read this. Do you want to go back and try again? Great. So then it's a learning moment that says sometimes, you know, sometimes the same thing with the dog food. You know, it's like sometimes we think we did something and we didn't. And so we've got to have a system in place for checking.
And do
the way
you,
the AC works.
Do you just stay away from the idea that he might have lied? And, like, no, don't deal with that, or dealing with the, like, if the system's in place, then lying will be taken care of. I mean, I wonder sort of about the, like, how do you coach around the line? Like, oops, I caught you. Or do we just say, okay, well, let's. Because I love the tone you take, which is lovely and very different from mine, which is like, aha, I knew you didn't do it, you know? I've got to get away from this sort of gotcha mentality.
Right.
So whereas you're like, oh, it doesn't seem like you did that, so let's go back and do that again.
Right. Right. So it goes back to naughty versus neurological, right? So
yeah.
So what's the buy-in for you on the gotcha? Why is that important?
Well, I am trying to reinforce that the truth is always better, but I guess I'm not really reinforcing that if every time I'm like, ha ha, I'm keeping score. You know?
Okay.
So I'm trying, I guess what I'm trying to reinforce is the importance of telling the truth.
Right. So, Krista, I know that I know what kind of mom you are. You're an amazing mom. You clearly articulate the values to Miles. He knows what those values are. You model truth-telling. You reward him for being honest. If he's not being truthful, then it's either because developmentally he's having a hard time telling the truth, or neurologically he's having a hard time telling the truth, or whatever it is, you've got a kid who's having a hard time telling the truth.
Yeah.
Right? It doesn't, I mean, that's the way I look at it. Honestly, it doesn't matter why. I got a kid who's having a hard time telling the truth, and I want my kid to be able to tell the truth. And so it's not, aha, you lied. It's, wow, you're having a hard time being honest. What's going on? Is it your brain? You know, I mean, I think that that's the thing. It's like I try to give my kids the benefit of the doubt, because we do have a value around telling the truth, and I preach about it, and we talk about it a lot. And you know what? It's a lot less stressful for me to trust that my kid's just having a hard time being honest than it is to go, oh, my kid's this loser kid who's going to be dishonest all the time.
Yeah.
I've got a psychopathical, whatever you have to say.
Yeah, I mean, to go down that path is just not pretty.
A lot. Exactly.
But
exactly.
As they're getting older, they tend to lie about more important things, and it's, I try to say, you know, it's a little, you know, if you want me to trust you and give you responsibilities, then I have to trust what you're telling me. He often will outright lie about that. And he's gotten worse about the homework, I think, as he's gotten older. He used to be like, no, I didn't finish it. Now he's like, yeah, I did it.
Well, here's what I would tell you is that I really believe that it's really paid off for me to just really hold him for the benefit of the doubt. I do look at him squirrely periodically and go, are you sure you're telling me the whole truth? And I'll give my kids a free pass sometimes. Like, if I really think that they're lying for the out, I'll say, okay, this is your one free pass. If you're lying and you want out, I'll let you out and I won't say a word. Just tell me the truth right now. And then once I've given them that, then I assume that if they're having a hard time, that they're having a hard time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really have to try that, staying on his side.
Yeah. So there's a whole blog for the online. I can write 7 blogs online.
I could read 7 books on it.
Okay, so we're gonna. So we haven't even really talked about motivation, and I gotta get on this because we've got this. So the 4 things that are important here are getting buy-in, making it easy for everybody, being flexible, and then focus on the process. So you want to make sure that if your kids are being successful, that you reward them for being successful, and not so much you reward them for the effort, and not necessarily the outcome of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I do want to talk a little bit about motivation, because motivation is a key part of systems and structures, and the reality is that the ADHD brain has a very, very difficult time doing anything unless there's a motivation in place. And,
yeah.
You know, those of us who are neurotypical would say, okay, if it's something really boring or something we don't really prefer to do, you know what, we're just going to buckle in and get it done. You know, it would seem like they would just get their homework done because it's going to give them a good, they're going to get a bad grade if they don't or whatever. You know, it's like it's, all the, it would seem like that would be motivating. I would say 9 times out of 10, it's not. You know, because if something's boring or if something's difficult or if something's uninteresting, the brain is just, the ADHD brain is just really has a difficult time. It's almost like moving through Jell-O is kind of the way I describe it. It's hard to move forward. And so there's 5 things that we talk about motivating the ADHD brain. And not everybody's motivated by all of them, but they are novelty. Wow, that's interesting. Competition. So I bet you can finish 10 problems. I bet you can finish at least 10 problems in the next 10 minutes with your competition. Or I bet you I'll race you upstairs to get your shoes. Urgency, which is one that a lot of us as adults use, which is a deadline. It's like, oh, my gosh, I have to have this done. I've waited for the last possible minute. It's due tomorrow, right? The urgency is motivating. Interest is something that's really interesting to us. We're going to be motivated, and we're going to be able to focus on it. And humor. And that's just kind of, if something's really fun and funny, it's going to be more motivating. And I think that the one of the things that I learned this weekend at the CHAG conference, the language I love is that the challenges of executive function that ADDers have are situational. And so this whole thing that, you know, why can you focus on Minecraft and you can't focus on math is because of motivation. Because Minecraft is interesting or it's novel or it's competitive or it's fun, right? And so those things are in place. Math is not novel. It's not interesting. It's, you know, and so a lot of times we use urgency to get it done. But so you want to know and use all 5 of those as potential motivators for your kids. But know that in the process of putting any kind of structure in place, you've got to make sure that it includes some sort of motivation.
Yeah.
All right. So talked about a lot of stuff, talked about systems and structures and motivation. Any kind of from either of you on those 2 things?
So the thought that's going through my head is the easiest thing for me to motivate him with is obviously Minecraft. But I feel like I'm elevating Minecraft all the time. You know, it's like, it's like a tool and a tragedy at the same time.
So the question is, Krista, so what?
So then the question is, I guess what the answer I think is like, I got to start using some of these other things. Like, I'm being lazy.
So wait. So what is Minecraft as a motivator? Answer the question.
Because I think it buys into this, like, sort of over-obsession with video games that 11-year-old boys have.
Okay, so what?
So I'm hoping that he'll do something else in life besides video games.
He will eventually.
Good.
Okay. All right, he will eventually. So I guess the question
like most things that worry me, it's like a fear that, like, you know, that there's too much importance on this gaming thing, but yet it's what he loves.
So you're not trying to balance his interest in life. You're trying to motivate him.
Yeah. So stay with what you're. Yeah.
So the one caveat I would do for that, and I you didn't mention this, but you want to pick motivators that don't set you up for failure. Because if you've got a motivator that is difficult, that you have their kids have a difficult time transitioning from. So, for example, you wouldn't want to use Minecraft as a motivator to get your kids, you know, done with breakfast, because then they get stuck in Minecraft and you wouldn't get them out the door in the morning, right?
Right.
So you want to make sure that you aren't creating another problem by the motivation. But if you're talking about just kind of you want him to be a well-balanced adult, again, Krista, you're a fabulous mom. You're going to – Miles is going to be a well-balanced adult. Even his Minecraft is his reward system. And it's easy
okay.
for you. And that's the
yeah.
thing. Remember, that's like one of the number one things is you want to pick something that's easy for you.
Right.
If it's working, then if it's not broken, don't fix it.
Yeah. Right.
Ellen?
No.
Ellen, anything else from you in terms of motivation? And
I think motivation has been a hard thing for me because Austin was not a kid that had passions about things, and he wasn't a big phone user, he wasn't a big texter, you know, so he was happy to sit in his room alone.
Yeah.
So it's always
I think that's the thing is that you almost need to interview your kids and really kind of figure out what it is that motivates them. What would you like as a reward? And our kids are old enough. They can understand that the brain doesn't work well without a motivation. You can have a conversation. And so, you know, my son sat there for an hour before I sat down with him last night trying to work on this thing he was doing for chemistry. And he was like, I'll never get done with this. This is so hard, blah, blah, blah. I sat down with him, and we were done in 10 minutes. You know, so we can now have a conversation that says, what was different? You know, you can do that with your kids. What was different? Oh, I was really motivated because I knew that when we got done that I'd be able to blah, 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 you know. And so then your kids can learn how the ADHD brain needs to be genuinely interested. It needs some motivation. And so the language then becomes, buddy, you're having a hard time getting through your homework. What's your motivation? And then
right.
he can go, okay, yeah, oh, well, when I get done, I'm going to reward myself with ice cream. Or when I get done, I really wanted to do this thing, and I won't have time if I don't get it done. You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So you begin to
Yeah, his big
that.
Thing is music, but I also, because he can't do, like, large blocks of homework at a time, I use that for his break time. But sometimes the break time becomes longer than it should.
Well, and so, again, it's that same sort of thing. You might need a system and structure in place. So it may be for your break, you know, if you work hard for 30 minutes, you can watch one YouTube video that's 5 minutes or less. And I add that because I found that my son watches these hour-long YouTube videos that I didn't even know existed.
Yeah.
but, you have a structure in place that's very clear about what the reward is with a boundary around it. Okay. So I want to give you a chance to kind of wrap up here. So there's the four questions that we ask at the end of every call. So let's take a minute. We're on page 26 of the workbook. For those of you who are listening, what did I focus on? What did I pay most attention to in the conversation today? What's my clarity or takeaway? What's my aha from the conversation? What's a realistic action step for me to take? How can I set myself up for success with this action? I would love to hear from both of you whenever you're ready.
So my aha is one of the last things you said about sitting down with him about what is a motivator for him. I feel like I'm constantly trying to figure out what his motivation is, and I think actually talking to him and say, you know, what would be your motivator would be very helpful. So it's he is buy-in. And I think... And it may change, and I just have to be open that it may change. You know, this week it may be this, and next week it may be something else, and keep it open to say, look, let's try this for a couple of days, or even nightly. You know, what's your reward for getting this done tonight? Because Fridays might be different because he wants to go out, you know, versus he wants to, you know, play music. And I think that would help me take aim on this whole issue of motivation. I mean, for him, it really, motivation is such a huge thing, and I find it very difficult, and it's why we have so many issues, is getting him motivated to do things. So it's all sort of rolled together into one ball, I guess, this week, and really talking to him about what are those rewards that will motivate him to do the things that need to get done.
Okay.
And then the checking, that I think, then, you know, making sure it's done and checking so that I can give him the reward.
Okay. Good. All right. So, did somebody just join us?
I did. I'm wondering if I'm at the wrong time, though.
So, Melissa, hi, it's Diane. The next call is in an hour. We're just wrapping up this call.
Okay. I'll call back.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, perfect. Great. Thanks.
Bye.
Krista, what about you?
So, I think mine is sort of recognizing that he's kind of this preteen and getting into this place where I need to engage him more in the design of the system and structure, sort of using that process of, like, you know, you can design this as long as it works, and then when it doesn't work, we brainstorm maybe alternatives together, and then the last one is typically where I'm starting, as I'm mandating a structure or a system. So I think he is. I think he will benefit from being a co-constructor more so, and I realize that I'm not giving him that chance, and that's going to happen more and more. So we both better learn that skill. So I think I want to kind of take aim at the morning routine and really sit down with him and think it through, as well as continue kind of the conversation with him around his meds, particularly because he's going on new meds today, to really be able to differentiate his own marvelousness from those that the meds help him be.
Great. Okay. All right, everybody. Great call today. It's nice to have a little intimate group today. And
yeah, thanks so much.
The next call is, I hope everybody has a great Thanksgiving. So we're on the week after next, on the 2nd. It's the next one.
All right.
Talk to you soon, guys.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.